From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is the Political Junkie Goes West podcast on Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Today's September 3rd, 2019, and Hurricane Dorian is dominating the news. So is that mass shooting that happened in Texas over the weekend. We're going to deal with both topics as we start the conversation with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. And he joins us now from the Washington, D.C. area. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Beth. Happy post-Labor Day.
Yeah, interesting.
Actually, I take it back. There's no such thing as a happy post-Labor Day because I don't want summer to end. I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to see teachers' dirty looks. I don't want to see any of that stuff.
To quote a song from our past.
Yes.
It was an interesting holiday, though, because so many people all over the world were watching this hurricane, such a massive storm, so much power. I'm going to get to the shooting in a minute, but should this storm be lifting the climate change discussion in a different way?
Well, I'm not sure. I think one of the reasons, well, two reasons I'm not sure. One, I think everybody's focused actually on what the hurricane could do, what damage it could do, and less about a political debate. Two, Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, was a big, when he was in the presidential race, he talked almost solely about climate change, and nobody seemed to pay attention to him, even though everybody agrees it's an important issue. And three, I think the Democrats are united on this issue. The president, of course, and many Republicans, well, let me just stick with the president. The president clearly has many doubts about whether climate change is real and whether the science is real. I think once there is a Democratic nominee and it's he or she against President Trump, then I think climate change will be part of the real debate. But right now, it seems like every Democrat is on the same page about the importance of it, not that anything is getting done about it.
All right. Well, let's shift to the other story. Actually, there were a number of high-profile stories over this Labor Day weekend. The mass shooting in Texas. The Washington Post today, I don't know if you saw this, Ken, is reporting that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, all right, I'm going to stay noncommittal on bringing new gun legislation to a vote. He said, we're in discussion about what to do. And here's the quote. I said several weeks ago, if the president took a position on a bill so that we knew we'd actually be making a law, I'd be happy to put it on the floor. So all eyes right now are on the president again in the wake of a mass shooting.
Well, you know something, we talked, you and I, Beth, talked about the after that horrific shootings in El Paso and Dayton. And back then, the president said, you know, I really believe in more thorough background checks. And Mitch McConnell says, well, we'll probably bring it up when we come back to the Senate comes back after the Labor Day recess, after the summer recess. Well, then President Trump, as he's done so many times, certainly as he did after Parkland, he walked back his comments about background checks and said, we have as much as we need. We have all the background checks we need. It's more about mental health. So I think there's a disingenuousness to what Mitch McConnell is saying. I mean, basically, matter of fact, there are campaign buttons out already. He's up for re-election next year. There are campaign buttons that are calling him not only Moscow Mitch, but they're now calling him Massacre Mitch,
right,
because they're blaming him for the Senate's refusal to act on gun control. And so the president is not going to back any gun control measures other than mental health issues. And that means Mitch McConnell isn't either, even though there seems to be such an outcry after every time there's another horrific gun shooting. People say, well, we need more gun laws. Now, whether it would affect, whether it would change the dynamic at all, that guy in Odessa, apparently he had a criminal record yet and was still able to get an assault weapon or a semi-assault weapon. So there's so many things to look into. But right now, given the fact that the president feels there is no need for more legislation, given the fact that Mitch McConnell says ostensibly that I'm just waiting on the president, the only thing I can imagine changing the dynamic is if the Democrats win control of the Senate next year. And that right now is still a long shot.
Or if Mitch McConnell lost in his reelection bid, I don't know what's happening in that race or who his opponent is. Do you know much about it at this point?
Oh yeah, well there are two different Democrats who are running. There's a woman who Amy McGrath, who ran close in a House race in 2018. She seems to be the Washington Beltway establishment figure. And there's a guy, I think his name is Matt Jones. He's a sports and politics commentator on radio and television. And he's kind of running a, you know, a no holds barred campaign against Mitch McConnell. Of course, there's not going to be there's still a Democratic primary coming next May. And I should say that no Republican incumbent in the Senate in Kentucky has been defeated since 1974. Mm. It's really a pretty much Republican state. But McConnell's numbers have never been strong. I mean, he's canny. He's wily. He's a great campaigner. He has a great organization. But he's not Mr. Popularity either. So we'll see what happens. Trump remains very strong and popular in Kentucky. He could lose, but I think, you know, for the Democrats, other than the defeating President Trump, I think they'd rather see nothing more than see the defeat of Mitch McConnell. But right now, that's a long shot, too.
I want to get back to the details about the gunman in Odessa. It was the Texas governor who said not only did the gunman have a criminal history, but he had failed a gun purchase background check in Texas. So what they didn't say is how did he obtain this assault-style rifle that he used, as you pointed out. But there might be more to learn there about what he went through, when he was turned down, how he got the weapon. It seems, as authorities said over the weekend, this was a man in a spiral. It wasn't just that he was fired and decided to go on a shooting rampage. So I think there's more here that we're going to learn from.
I agree. And it doesn't seem like he was a terrorist. He doesn't seem like he was a white supremacist. It sounds like he was an angry guy who lost his job and wanted to take it out on anybody he saw. And that's true. But Beth, you make a very important point that if there are laws, everybody says, oh, we need more gun control laws. We need more gun control laws. Well, apparently there is a gun control law that says somebody with a criminal background has no right, and he failed a test. He or she has no right to own or purchase a gun, and yet he did anyway. So in addition to the debate about what gun laws are needed, we have to see how effective they are, because if they can't, in a case with somebody who already has a criminal record and was able to purchase a gun, well, then what's the point of having these laws? So there are so many questions. I know we're just talking about just days after the latest shooting, but this just seems to, undercutting the need for laws, but what's the purpose of a law if it's not going to be followed?
You have to look at the details, Ken. So if I look at an article by USA Today, it says that in 2001, this gunman was arrested for a misdemeanor offense. So a misdemeanor offense wouldn't trigger a failure of the background check. So maybe something else did. That's why I say there's more of the story that we don't know. However, he apparently did not go through a background check for the gun that he used on Saturday. So that is something separate. How did he get that gun? As you said, it's just a few days after, and there's more to know here.
Yes, but right. But once again, we're dealing with somebody who got a gun, who pretty easily, apparently easily got a gun and killed people. And we saw that. We keep seeing that in San Bernardino and in Orlando and Parkland and Sandy Hook and El Paso and Dayton. It just doesn't seem to stop. And in fairness, when the Democrats had control of the government right in the first 2 years of Barack Obama's term, there were no gun control laws passed easily either. Even Dianne Feinstein, who wanted that assault weapons background checks law put into place after Sandy Hook, when the Democrats had a majority, they had 55 seats in the Senate, and Dianne Feinstein's bill could only get 40 votes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know when profiles and courage starts to mean something in this country, but everybody says it's not going to work. It won't take effect. It won't mean anything. Let's see. Something has to be done. Something has to be changed. And right now, it sounds like Democrats, certainly the Democrats running for president, seem to be on the same page that guns are one of the critical issues of this country. And there's no question in my mind that it will be a critical issue come the fall 2020 presidential campaign.
Right. And you're starting to sound a little more like me when you say something has to be done.
Well, yes. But But I'm more pessimistic than you because
that's
often
true.
it seems like when I'm on the show with you, it's right after President Trump says something must be done, and then you have this little you know, a little bit of hope in your body, and then I say yes, but we've heard this before and nothing gets done. And I don't want to be right. I would rather you be right. But the point is,
I can't move myself away from the. There's going to be a tipping point here. Something has to happen. I believe that this is it, because if I move to the other perspective, the pessimism, the nothing's going to change this, then I actually end up echoing the president, because on Sunday he said to reporters, this mass shooting, quote, really hasn't changed anything. So I don't.
Well, it hasn't changed anything because the president refuses to acknowledge the need for possible need for more gun laws. And again, I don't know what the answer is, but the fact is Congress has done nothing and has been doing nothing other than maybe banning bump stocks. But that seems to be a very limited. I think to me, mandatory background checks seem to be the minimum that Congress could do. But again, with Mitch McConnell saying what he's saying, nothing is going to get done until something else changes. I mean, I appreciate your optimism and I abhor my pessimism, but all I can say, I just react to what I see, and what I see ain't so good.
You're listening to The Political Junkie, Ken Rudin. This is the September 2019 episode of The Political Junkie Goes West podcast. So, Ken, we have a one-night Democratic presidential debate coming up. It is September 12th. The field has narrowed to 10 candidates on the stage. And right now, Joe Biden is in the spotlight, struggling with some of his own words and some of his own storytelling. So, in a way, he is one of his own opponents right now.
Well, that's true. Joe Biden is running against Joe Biden.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
He has been a gaffe machine since he first ran for president in 1987.
Which he admits.
When he actually,
He admits that and says, I'd rather be a gaffe machine than dishonest, which is what he accuses the president of being.
Well, I don't think anybody is considering Joe Biden or calling Joe Biden dishonest. I mean, he's honest to a fault, but there are a lot of faults, and the gaffe machine is one of them. Another thing is, of course, he's 76 years old, and while I don't want to be an ageist, but you sometimes when he forgets certain things, when he flubs a bunch of things, you just wonder if he's up to the task. As he may have been, well, you know, who knows? I mean, when he was first running in 87, you know, 30 years ago, he made the same mistakes he's making now. The difference is that he's more of a reserve campaigner. He stumbles a bit more. And you know something, when you attend a rally of Joe Biden, you don't have the passion that you'll have like for Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or somebody like that. So The most fascinating thing is that with all these strikes against him, and there are a bunch of strikes against him, he's still the front runner. Nothing seems to have changed since the first debate back in June. I mean, back in June, he was on the defensive against Kamala Harris, who accused him of coddling segregationists and, opposing school busing. And he was on the defensive, but he's still the front runner. He still leads in Iowa. He still leads in New Hampshire. He still leads nationally. I don't know how long that lead will last. We'll see what happens after the September 12th debate. Then there's another one on October 15th. I just don't know. I don't, you know, as much as I thought he was the clear loser in the first debate, I don't think he did so well in the second debate either. But he still has the lead, and he's still the presumptive front runner because more and more people think he can beat, or he has the best chance of beating, Donald Trump. And for some Democrats, that is more important than anything else.
Ken, are you looking at the top three in the Democratic race, which arguably could be Biden, Warren, and Sanders? Although,
well, I think that's the top.
Or are you looking at the top five? Are you looking at the top five more interestingly?
Well, if we're looking at the top five, it's interesting. Nobody else other than Biden, Warren, and Sanders, nobody else is in double figures. Kamala Harris did have a big boost coming out of the June debate, but then she fell back to earth after the July debate. And the last poll, it seems like she's about 7%. She's clearly number four, but you know, a bunch of points below the top three. And then I guess Pete Buttigieg would follow.
Right.
And that also single
some polls
digits.
Show them shifting Harris and Buttigieg in fourth and fifth.
Yeah, no, but I think that's fair. I think we've just labeled the top five. And look, I know 1972 was a gazillion years ago, but in January of 1972, George McGovern, who became the nominee that year, was at 3% in the polls. So I think things can change in a hurry. They don't necessarily have to change after a debate. Remember, you know, Jimmy Carter was Jimmy Who until he did well in Iowa and won New Hampshire in 1976. So things can change. I'd like to give voters more credit than the pollsters in that sometimes to their credit, voters seem to know what they're saying. So I still think that for all the debates, we have September 12th, we have October 15th, we have more to come the rest of the year and early next year. February 3rd starts the voting in Iowa. 8 days later is New Hampshire. That's going to be crucial. And I think that you may not have a great debate performance, but look, remember, Joe Biden had very good debate performances in 2008. And on the night of the Iowa caucuses, he got 1%. And he was out of the race that night. He dropped out the night of Iowa. So I get sad when candidates drop out because they don't make the right poll numbers in August or September of the year before, as Kirsten Gillibrand dropped out just the other day.
Right.
But let's see what happens when the voters have their say.
Okay, so quick yes or no. Do you think Beto O'Rourke should drop out and run for Senate, as a lot of people believe, although he hasn't said he would do that yet?
I would never give anybody advice whether they should stay in or stay out or not. But of course, there are a bunch of Democrats, Beto O'Rourke in Texas, Steve Bullock in Montana, and a non-presidential candidate, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, whom Democrats were saying, look, stop fooling around here. We need to win back the Senate. And we think Beto and Bullock and Stacey, I'm so good friends with them that I can call them by their first names, have a shot at, you know, should run for the Senate. Should Beto do it? Should Beto O'Rourke run for the Senate? One, there's no guarantee he could beat John Cornyn, but there's no question that the big enthusiasm that Beto O'Rourke had when he first entered the race, coming off that close race against Ted Cruz, that has dissipated. His numbers have gone down a lot. His fundraising has stalled. And maybe he'll see what John Hickenlooper and Jay Inslee and other Democrats have seen, that they're not going to be the 45th president of the United States, and sixth president of the United States, and maybe Senate is a better option.
All right, Ken. Well, I think we're going to leave it there, unless you think that any of this latest ripple with Joe Biden is going to change the polls or anything going into at least September 12th. Doesn't look like it. But that should be a very interesting night with the top three, the top five, the top 10 on stage.
It absolutely will. Let me just say one more thing about Hurricane Dorian. My mom lives in Delray Beach, Florida. She is in a possible path, but I spoke to her this morning and she said she feels good because she said it doesn't look like it's going to touch land until it reaches Jupiter. And I told my mom, well, that's great because that's hundreds of millions of miles away. I guess I was confusing Jupiter, Florida with Jupiter, the planet. But either way, I think
she's your mom. She's
safe.
Heard those jokes all her life with you.
Yeah, and she still accepts me as her son. That's sort of like the way you accept me. Don't you think of me as a son sometimes?
Let's say
grandfather.
Let's say brother.
Okay, that's fine.
With bad dad jokes sometimes.
what would Kenny be without dad jokes? I know.
But our thoughts are with your mom and your whole family. Okay, we'll hope that everything passes safely as that storm moves northward.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Ken. That is Ken Rudin. He is the Political Junkie, and we talk to him every month for the Political Junkie Goes West podcast. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.